So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety. Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. I'm Nate.
I'm David.
Here we are on a frigid January morning in Middle Tennessee.
It is cold.
Yeah. Of course, I'm well aware that our neighbors to the north are buried under multiple feet of snow and the winds are howling. And,
yes, we but can't still, complain, but it is cold.
I heard they canceled some school around here.
Yes, there was, I guess, is there a magic temperature at which we determine it's disastrous?
I don't know, but it was below freezing. Safe. I don't know that anybody spotted a snowflake, but
I don't think so. But yeah. There was probably just the threat of a rumor.
Oh, I love living in the South.
That's right. Yeah. You can't beat the South with the weather fear.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. My buddy Jeff is here.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I'm going to bolt afterwards. I've got to run back to the hospital. Allie, my wife Allie, had her knee replacement yesterday.
Yes.
And the doctor had told us that they'd keep her in the hospital 2 days. This is the second time she's had the surgery done, and the first time, man, they sent her to a rehabilitation hospital for a month afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All kinds of stuff. It's blowing my mind. 2 days, she's going home?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out it's not even 2 days. She had it done yesterday. She's going home today. I got to go pick her up.
You know, you got to love insurance now, I guess. It's like, yeah, wow. Yeah. So she, did they make her walk off of the operating room table, or did they provide transportation from the OR to at least recovery, or is that on you now?
Yeah. No, they did roll her up to the room. But, I mean, within an hour of after she woke up, was in the room, they had her up and walking.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable. I'm a little bit apprehensive about what's ahead, though, because I'll take her home. We have a hospital bed set up in the guest bedroom downstairs, and I've got things set up. But historically, Allie is not the best patient, and I'm not a very good nurse.
It's a great combination. The days that she doesn't want to be her and you don't want to be you, when those are the same day, that's not a good day.
I don't know. You know, life goes on. We're growing and changing, and maybe this will actually be pleasant, but I'm braced for some difficult days ahead.
Yeah, you just stock up on ice cream is about all I can tell you. That's about the only safe dopamine that I can offer you.
Yeah, I think probably the good rule is if you're married to an addict, and addicts are notoriously self-centered, it shouldn't be your first choice as a primary caregiver.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, golly. Yeah. This really tests the quality of my recovery to see how long I can go without making her recovery about me, right?
Yes.
I think I'm already doing it. I'm already making it about me.
People will be asking you how your knee replacement is coming along. Yeah.
Ah, the joys of growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slow and steady.
Yeah. The practice going well?
It is going well. It's kind of a contradictory, interesting thing to say in the work that I do that, you know, my practice is going well because it just means that there are so many addicted people out there that, you know, we can't get them all in. But
yeah.
But as far as seeing people and honestly seeing people and results and change and things like that, it's going well, and I'm seeing some really good things happen in people's lives. And younger and younger, my youngest clients now are 15 years old.
Holy smokes, David.
My oldest client is, you know, in his mid-70s, and my youngest clients are now about 15.
Wow.
Yeah, and parents who have the foresight and the insight and the intuition that they trusted to get them to see some people before it gets
some help
into
early.
Full-blown problems.
How
you
great
know?
Is that?
So at the first sign of some things, people are starting to perk up a little bit.
And you're able to establish some rapport even with kids that young?
I am, and it makes me feel so relevant and young. But you meet with them and you say, you know, do you on the first visit, you know, you're kind of just kind of feeling what's going to work and things, and you say, do you feel like this is a conversation you want to continue having? And they go, oh yeah, I'd love to come back. That makes
beautiful.
Me feel like, well, maybe, you know, they just want to be heard.
Yeah,
you know, they want a safe place and they want to be heard. So, but yeah, thanks for asking. It's going well.
Well, my buddy is here. I don't know how well you know this guy, but I so love and admire this man. Talk about a genuine fella with a lot of experience in recovery, and he's been around long enough to know that you don't hit the finish line until life is over, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a guy's not gonna he's not gonna bullshit us. He's not gonna pretend to be done, finished, perfect.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know him well. I've met him a couple of times, and so I'm really looking forward to getting to spend some time.
Okay. Listeners, hang on. We'll be back in a moment here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And another episode that I have been looking forward to. This guy's been on my mental radar ever since we started this weekly conversation, Dave.
Yeah, we've been talking about this. This is good.
This is an old friend who has been having this conversation out loud for longer than either of us have.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Our guest today is comedian Jeff Allen. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, man, I just don't understand why I'm on a show called Positive Sobriety when I'm such a cynic. Of course, I have to tell you, I read something that was great, that if you ask a cynic why they're a cynic, nobody will ever cop to that.
Yeah.
I'm not a cynic, I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. You know, because somewhere in our wiring, we know there's something wrong with cynicism.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm a realist, all right?
All right.
And
we'll
would you say that that's been a progression in recovery? Did you come into recovery as a hardcore cynic?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Bitter, jaded, foul-mouthed. Yeah. Angry cynic. And it's funny, somebody asked me recently, what's the difference between your comedy today and when you first got into recovery? And I said, I just don't take my comedy that seriously anymore. So that's it. I'm still cranky, I'm crabby, I'm 62, so I have a right to be. I'm in pain.
You've earned it.
Well, do us a favor, back it up for us and describe for our listeners the long and winding road that led to the rooms. How did you wind up in the rooms? Take us way back.
Oh, way back. Well, my sister's wedding was the first time I got drunk, and I found the magic.
How old were you then?
14, 15, And it's an interesting story about that was, of course, I went to bed, the room spins, I vomit. Mm-hmm. And I remember in a haze, my mother cleaning it up, and my father said, look, he wants to drink like a man, let him sleep in it like a man.
Mm.
So that was my first, unconscious definition of what a man is.
Oh.
It's okay to drink till you puke, as long as you sleep in it. So that's kind of, you look back and you go, I don't know, I would have handled my kids a little differently.
Yeah.
I would have rubbed their face in it. But no, that was, I thought I would never drink again because I woke up with severe just hangover and just in pain. I go, boy, that's a lot, and it's funny when you read in scripture, the dog returns to the folly of returning to its own vomit. So Anyway, that was basically my drinking life until I learned to keep it down. My body tried to tell me over and over and over again that this was not good for me. I mean, I drank until I threw up. That's when I knew I had had enough, is when it came up out.
Yeah.
And eventually I learned to keep it down, and I took pride when I got to college, and everybody said, man, this guy can drink all day, and the key was to not show it. So you hold it in. And eventually that led to, I knew I had a problem. I knew I was different because I had blackouts early. Mm-hmm. None of my friends did.
Yeah.
And to the point where, I'd go into a bar at 20, 21 years old, and a girl would throw a drink in my face, like when she'd see me, and I'd go, what was that all about? And they'd go, you don't remember, and they'd go, no, I don't, and so I knew I had a problem. So by the time I was 25, it was the first trip to AA, I got drunk with some, I realized I was sitting at a bar in my small town, and I grew up in a south side small town, and while I was passed out in the booth, these guys tied my shoelaces together, so when I stood up, I fell on my face, and I walked home. It's about a 2-mile walk with one shoe tied to the other, drunk and crying from the humiliation of it. And I woke up the next day, and I realized that the people I was drinking with were all the brothers of friends of mine. My friends had moved on, they were getting, they were involved in relationships. They were becoming adults.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started drinking with the younger brothers, and they were mocking me.
Yeah.
And so I called my father up, told him I had a problem, if he could come and get me. And again, your parents, they didn't realize, so you're not calling them up every night, telling them, I'm passing out drunk every night. So my dad took me home, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. That was my first trip. And like a lot of us, I went in, listened to the stories, and realized, I'm not that bad. I was still doing cocaine, you need to be awake when you go to the meetings. Boring thing. So anyway, at 25, I decided I should join the Air Force because that was and the guy actually, I'm telling you, I'm straight up, the guy says, why do you want to join? I mean, they were even curious.
Yeah.
Why someone who should be an adult wants to join the military. And I said, I have nothing going for me. I have nothing. I was 3 years into comedy. Couldn't get a job. So anyway, I was one day from taking the physical to get into the Air Force. And I got a call from that night before I was going in for the physical to go to Cincinnati to do a comedy club. And being the responsible adult that I am, I said, no, I have this commitment to the military, and I need to do that. It's a lie. I said, sure,
I'll just go.
Screw the military. So I went up, and I did comedy, and I got another, and then I started getting busy doing stand-up. I was able to stay busy, but the drinking, I was a binge drinker.
Yeah.
I'd go, 4 or 5 days just really hardcore.
Yeah.
And never drank in the morning because I woke up at 2 p.m. So, that solved that problem. On that checklist of are you an alcoholic, do you drink in the morning? No. Not me. Drink in the morning. I used to tell the story. I worked a strip club down in Atlanta called the Cheetah Tree for 14 days. And
there.
Yeah, my routine was pretty simple. I'd wake up at 3 or 4 p.m. I'd immediately order a Domino's pizza, and I'd get in the shower, and then the pizza'd be there by the time I got out of the shower. When I got out. So at the end of 2 weeks, I literally had 13 Domino's pizza boxes with three or four slices eaten out of each, and. The guy wants to hire me. I was reading a joke book I bought at the mall.
Wow.
For my show. I would just sit on a stool, and people would scream at me for 30 minutes while the dancers. I was just there to give the dancers a rest night, 30 minutes.
Wow.
And I'm reading a joke book, and the guy wants to hire me for 28 weeks. And I said, are you nuts? They hate me. He goes, yeah, but they stay. And even in my drunken condition, I said, I'll be dead of cirrhosis. I mean, because I was out until 5-6 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
Yeah.
And doing coke. Cocaine was flowing through the club. Anyway, that was my life for 2 weeks. And I went home, and I remember drying out and thinking, I got it. That was really a turning point.
Yeah.
Where this is a path, you know. And I wasn't much longer. I think I told friends of mine I'm going to be married in a year mm-hmm. because I thought that would straighten me up. Mm. And, of course, my friends being the supportive people they were, go, who'd marry you? You know? Which is a legitimate question. And lo and behold, Tammy, my lovely wife, I wasn't but a couple months later I met her, and she had a two-year-old son, and I was living in L.A., and I thought, this might work,
yeah.
You know, and so as it turned out, it really was that step into responsibility. Mm-hmm. The catalyst that got me, my son was, of course, you know, I met her in November. I asked her to marry me in April. She got pregnant in May. We got married in July. Mm-hmm. So that's the transition. So I went from single and traveling 50 weeks a year with no responsibility. I literally had a mattress on a floor in LA.
Wow.
That was it. I had a little tiny TV in my room and a VW Bug that I bought for $500.
Yeah.
And that was it. I, wow. You know, bounced checks all over the place. You know,
yeah.
Again, I was one of those people who, you know, if I got checks, you mm-hmm. know, I'd fit really good in the federal government right now. Hey, we got ink, we got paper, we got money. You know? So, but anyway, I when I met Tam, I just thought this might work. Mm-hmm. So I asked her to marry me, a Cleveland baggage claim, because I'm a romantic guy. You know, I did. I was on a red eye from L.A. to Ohio to meet her, and probably over Nebraska in my seventh vodka.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I think I'll ask her. So why wait? You know, asked her to marry me, and this I'm not making this up. I said, you want to get married? She says, yeah, if that's what you want. I mean, that's how excited she was at the process of spending the rest of her life with me, you know, because I was such a catch.
Yeah,
I was always funny if they had those dating sites. I was writing this down the other day. If I filled out honestly one of those dating sites, uh-huh. you know, single white male with alcoholic drug addict with anger and rage issues,
yeah.
seeking woman who will overlook those shortcomings.
Yeah.
And
swipe left or right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we leave. You know, the luggage comes, and we're engaged. You know, and she again, the baggage she picked up really was me. You know? And so we moved to Boston, and people ask, you know, how could she not know? You know, again, alcoholic is such people who haven't been raised around alcoholics, and she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
They assume it's just you're a gutter rat. You're slovenly, you don't function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of functioning alcoholics. I remember seeing and hearing early that most of them are weekend drunks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just get drunk on weekends. They work Monday through Friday, they work hard, they mm-hmm. feed their family, and they tell themselves they're privileged to this, and then they leave their family for the only free time they have
right.
to grow their life and to expand. Whether it's intellectually or career-wise, and they waste. And next thing you know, they look back 20 years and they want to know where all the time went.
Yeah.
So I was a binger, you know. I'd go out of town for 3, 4, 5 days, and I would just go at it hardcore, come home, dry out. And mm-hmm. that's what Tammy had for a husband, was a dried-out drunk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I came home one day. I was living in Boston, and in Boston, I didn't travel so much. So I couldn't not binge at home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's when it really started going bad.
Yeah.
It was, I remember one night coming out of a club, and I was going to do some coke for the ride home. And I'm bending down to do the coke. There's a rap on the window, and I look up, and it's a Boston policeman.
Yeah.
So they get me out of the car, and they realize I'm doing coke. So they handcuff me, and they're putting me in the cruiser. And as luck would have it, and one of God's coincidences, a off-duty cop who was working the comedy club I just finished came mm-hmm. out to smoke a cigarette, and he saw his fellow officer put me in a cruiser. He goes, mm-hmm. what are you doing? He goes, well, he was doing cocaine. And he said, hey, he's one of the comics, let him go. So they're taking the cuffs off me, and they look at me, and they said, you have no idea how lucky you are. The DA is up for re-election.
Wow.
And they love parading white suburban boys in front of the camera mm-hmm. right before the election. Mm-hmm. You were looking at 3 to 5.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah. That's just one, you know, and you drive home and you're thinking, well, that should scare you.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't but 2 nights later. I was so drunk, I was driving up the wrong ramp. I got into I-93 going the wrong way in Boston, into traffic. Fortunately, it was 1 a.m, so there wasn't a lot of traffic. But, you know, you stop, you back down, you drive home. And I got lost going home.
Yeah.
What was normally a 25-minute, 30-minute drive turned into an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Mm. Drunk out of my mind, you know. And again, just didn't want my wife to find out, you know. So it wasn't a few nights later, went out, get trashed. Tammy's home with the kids, you know. I come stumbling at about 1 in the morning, and I got enough Coke left, so I'm sitting up, and I'm drinking rum, and I'm trying to figure out where all the guilt came from. I mean, I'm overwhelmed with guilt.
Yeah.
And I never had guilt. I mean, you know, as a single man, I never did. I mean, if I got arrested, I got arrested. I mean, that's just part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, if I threw up, you know, that's a man. You know? Mm-hmm. And, but this is guilt. This is like just awful.
Yeah.
And I come to the conclusion that it's her.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It all started with the marriage mm-hmm. and the kids.
Yeah.
You know. So now I'm thinking, how can I get out of this? And I come to, you know, again, insane people think insane things. If I mm-hmm. beat my wife up, she has to divorce me. Because I can't imagine a woman living with a guy that, you know, so. Anyway, I drink enough rum and I do enough cocaine and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I walk into the bedroom. I'm going to drag her out of bed and beat her. And again, that quiet little voice inside of us, you know, I do have a conscience that mm-hmm. says this is wrong. And I start getting in this discussion within myself, standing mm-hmm. over my wife while she's sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then my son started crying. He was 6 months old, started crying. So I went in, I got to quiet him down. Anyway, I snap and start spanking him. Mm-hmm. Tammy wakes up, comes in. Said, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. My God, he's 6 months old, you know. And she sat on the end of the bed and fed him. Mm-hmm. And I just got overwhelmed with what just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, my son got beat because he was hungry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I could have killed him.
Yeah.
I could have. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have taken much. So anyway, when things calmed down, I just told her flat out, I got to go back to AA.
Yeah.
And if you don't take me, I won't go. And if I don't go, I don't think we're going to make it.
Yeah.
And the next day she took me to a meeting, right? You know, and in essence, they said, pray. I said, to what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, believe in God, you know. But I did what I was told.
Mm.
That's the only thing I did right. I did what I was told, like a child. Mm-hmm. So I did a third step prayer, you know, over and over. I didn't even know what it meant. Just remove me from the bondage of self so that I'm able to do thy will. Take away these difficulties so that victory over them, others may bear witness to thy strength, thy power, and thy way of life. Mm-hmm. And that was my mantra along with the serenity prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Grant me serenity. I probably spoke the serenity prayer in my mind, you know, 100 times a day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, through gritted teeth. You know, I got in screaming jags at red lights. I got, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember after a year of meetings, this little old lady walks over to me and sticks her finger in my navel because that's about how high she was. She says, young man, I've been listening to you for quite a while. Maybe the problem isn't your wife. Because that's all it was for me. You know, they said, be honest. So I'm honest. Yeah. I'd raise my hand and go, I don't like you. I don't like you. I don't like you. And, I tried to get fired from the 12-step program. But those disgusting people kept going, well, keep coming back. It'll get better. And it does. It does.
Yeah. Well, a guy with anger and addiction and resentment and all of that does comedy.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's a great outlet, comedy.
Yeah.
Because first of all, there's no rules. Mm-hmm. The audience will determine. And that was another thing. You know, somebody once said, pay attention to who you're reaching in your audience. And if you can, you know, you kind of have to judge by your appearances, but mm-hmm. you get an idea. Well, you know, the stuff I was saying about my wife. I mean, there were times, and it's stuff you can laugh about now, but that Tammy would leave the room if she came to a show, that mm-hmm. she'd leave in tears mm-hmm. because I'd call her bitch and I'd call her, you know, from the stage, you know, because this is funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys and wife beaters would be coming over to me. You must be married to the same bitch I'm married to, you know.
Yeah,
and you start realizing who you're attracting.
Yeah.
And you're mm-hmm. going, these are not people that I would hand pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I didn't want, you know,
yeah.
And but yeah, it's you know, Joan Rivers said comedy is anger. I mean, mm-hmm. as long as it stays at 49%, when it crosses over, and I crossed over, it was 70% of what I was,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting because that was the change as the recovery got better,
right? Yeah,
was
yeah.
There was a softening of the attitude. Mm-hmm. I just got cranky instead of just enraged.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember a female club owner, a woman, said to me, to my agent, she goes, "I can't have him in here anymore. I just don't like the way he talks about his wife."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, of course, thought she was being unreasonable. But, you know, when you do begin to, what is it? Aristotle said, an unexamined life is not worth living.
Right.
So when you begin to examine, I mean, really, truly examine mm-hmm. and do that excavation of what's in your heart.
Yeah.
It became apparent that I had some misinformation mm-hmm. about what manhood was.
Right.
You know, but I was repeating certainly a lot of patterns that my father did.
Mm.
You know, there was no gentle or kind way to do conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Peck said, "Love can't begin. True love cannot begin till conflict enters a relationship."
Mm.
And what I realized at some point—it was years before I realized—that I had a fight or flight response to conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost as if I was PTSD'd as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I got thrown against the wall a couple times, and you learn. You know, mm-hmm. you just don't conflict with authority. You know,
right.
You know, so we would get into these discussions. And again, it's funny now, but. I would always flee to another room. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a point when you get married, you realize you can't run. Every relationship prior to Tammy, that was over.
Right.
That was it. Conflict that would enter. So here was a chance for the relationship to grow into something because mm-hmm. it always enters.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have love without conflict. So when conflict would enter, I'd flee. That would be it. Mm-hmm. It'd be over. She may not have known it, you know, but I did. And
right.
I wasn't going to. And people would ask, what happened? Oh, she wasn't worth the hassle. That's the defense.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't worth the hassle. Well, anyway, you're married, you got two kids, and you got to stick around. I mean,
yeah.
you can't flee. And I'd go to another room, and she'd follow me in. And mm-hmm. I'd go to another room, she'd follow, and eventually I'd put my head through the wall, or mm-hmm. I'd punch something, or scream, mm-hmm. you know. And
yeah.
and that was the only way I could. I found that I'm a large man. I got a loud voice
mm-hmm.
that I can get her to cower
mm-hmm.
and stop if I could just get louder and more. I never laid my hands on her. Well, I did once. I got her around the throat once, and I realized immediately, and I took my hands away, and she beat me. I let her. I let mm-hmm. her just pound on me
mm-hmm.
because she came from relationships that put their hands on her.
Yeah.
And she would never let that happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an interesting story. I was really heavy into John Bradshaw
mm-hmm.
and the family dynamic stuff, and the comedians were the good-natured ones. The youngest were the comedians in mm-hmm. a dysfunctional, and I was a baby. Youngest, and I'm a comedian, so I thought, well, that makes sense. So I'll read this guy. And Tammy and I got into an argument one day, and she threw one of Ryan's toys at me and hit me in the head. And that's when I got her around the throat. So my oldest son goes downstairs. He leaves. My youngest son is about three or four. And I'm sitting on the end of the bed. Tammy's crying, and I'm sitting there. We're just trying to calm down. And he comes over with a book, 4 years old.
Yeah.
Look, Daddy, look. Daddy, look. So I think a comedian.
Yeah.
Good natured. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking, and the voices start to escalate again. A lamp goes down in the living room. And I said, oh. And Tammy goes, what was that? I go, our oldest wants us to stop fighting. Threw a lamp down. Why would he do that? I said, well, today it's a lamp. Tomorrow it's drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow it's whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's too painful for him to have his parents the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to distract us. And it doesn't matter if he gets in trouble. Doesn't
yeah.
matter.
Yeah.
It just wants us to stop fighting.
Yeah.
And if we don't change, we're going to have a lot of issues with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it. And I knew it was on me.
Yeah, yeah,
I knew it was on me. Because Tammy's a counterpuncher.
Right, right.
You know, if she reflects what I give her. And that was the thing I resented for a long time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
was why is it always on me? Why is it always on me? Well,
yeah.
you're the drunk and you're you're the one with the rage issues. Mm-hmm. You're the one with all, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember a counselor told me once, when you feel like you want to punch a wall or something, put your hands in your pockets. So there was a time when I would stand there talking and not flee. She goes, you can't flee. You can't run. So you gotta just, you know, suffer through it, and it'll get better. You know, and I would sit there with my hands in my pocket, shaking. Yeah. And Tammy would be looking at me. What is that? What is, you know? I'm trying to just I'm trying. You know,
yeah.
I can't. My head is swimming. I mean, my hair on my neck is up. I mean, I got all this stuff going on over dinner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, that was. I used to lay in bed, and I know she's going to ask me what we want for dinner. It's 6:30 in the frickin' morning, and she wants to know what's for dinner. So I'd lay in bed until I got an answer. Then you know, I'd come out, and she'd go, well, Jeff, what do you want for dinner? Because she gets up an hour before I do.
Yeah.
So it's like, anyway, I get up. What do you want for dinner? I'm ready for you. Spaghetti. I don't want spaghetti. I'm out. I got nothing left for you. But that was, we'd get into fights.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to answer the questions. I just, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, why do you got to just leave me alone? That was it. I'm raising two kids. I got a beautiful wife, and I just want to be alone. But that's the disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's isolation. I used to say I drank alone all the time in a crowded disco.
Sure.
Just sit on a stool by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, again, people ask, "You ever drink alone?" No, I'm always around people. But
Yeah.
Get inside between my ears, and I would judge the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, I used to laugh at my father. He never believed in a judge, you know, God that would judge.
Yeah.
But yet he sat in his lazy boy, judged the entire world as it came in through the television. You know, in his throne. I used to say, stand on his throne. I'd call my parents.
Yeah.
Stand
yeah.
on his throne right now? Yes, Jeffrey, he's on his throne.
I said, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Well, as we well know, recovery is not just about not stopping behaviors, old behaviors. It's about starting new behaviors. And so it sounds like you're getting the messages that you have to alter the way in which you respond to the world, the way you face the world.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of free associate, freestyle for us a little bit about kind of the new habits and disciplines that you needed to develop.
Well, honesty.
Oh, yeah.
And I surrounded myself with people who I respected their opinions of my behavior.
Mm.
You know, wasn't always things I wanted to hear. You know, it's easy enough to find people that'll agree with everything you know, or rationalize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I used to make the joke, you know, well, I screamed and hollered at my wife the other night. Well, you didn't stab her, so you know.
Yeah.
You know? I go, well, that isn't what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear how do I not do that?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? I didn't understand the recovery mind. I mean, now with all the stuff they have on neuroplasticity and actually you can, your mind can change. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you're but I looked at it as like a computer, and I'd respond certain ways to certain stimuli. So I needed to change my response.
Mm.
And the more you do that, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
Like conflict.
Yeah.
The more I stayed, I eventually was able to sit and talk without my hands coming out of my pocket.
Yeah.
So what was a natural reaction is an anomaly today. I have those moments, but they're really far in between. And I see what it does to my wife, you know, in her home. And I learning that, you know, I began to talk to her about her because we fit. It's interesting to me. Somebody said that when two dysfunctional people get together, their neuroses fit like round pegs, round holes, and you fit. And you dance through life until somebody decides that they don't like the dance and they want to change.
Right.
Right.
And then all of a sudden their pegs get a little oval.
Right.
It doesn't fit right. So there's this pushback to try to jam them and get it right. And so anyway, I was talking to her about her upbringing. You know, this is all stuff people do when they date. We didn't date.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we became... I became interested in her.
Mm.
I mean, really interested in her. In her upbringing, when people raise voices, somebody got hit.
Mm.
So when I raised my voice, that triggered her panic.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fight or flight. It was she'd bow up and get in.
Right, yeah.
You know, and counterproductive as that was, you know, I used to say, why do you follow me? Why just give me 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. Why do you need 5 minutes? I do, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was a turning point, was when that little old lady stuck her finger in my stomach and said, maybe it's not her.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
now, did you find yourself adopting new behaviors that, good as they might be, were substituting for your addictive behaviors, like when you stopped drinking and doing coke?
Yeah, I got it. It, you know, I remember somebody, I was 2 or 3 years sober. I don't even know why he brought it up. You know, it's basically, this is the way I look at it. I got married with 2 coping skills. You know, I drank and I slept.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. I mean, yeah. That's how I got through life. You know, I'd wake up at 3, 4 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. you know, go and start the cycle all over.
Yeah.
And so one of them was masturbation, one mm-hmm. of the, you know, porn. I've always, you know, that was always part of my life. My father got me Playboy at 13 or 12. I don't know. He said, I want you to learn about women.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so here you go. And a matter of fact, 1 year for Christmas, Tammy got me a Playboy subscription. I mean, you know, she said, I'd rather have you fantasizing than chasing the real thing. You know?
I
mean, I didn't want to tell her the last thing I need in my life isn't a real woman. <You know? laughs> This one's working out so well, you know. So, you know, but so that was interesting. Here's an interesting, you know, anyway, I don't want to go into that. But
Yeah,
that was a new coping skill that I didn't realize. I mean, it was always part of my life.
Yeah,
but it really became part of my arsenal to cope with life.
Wow,
was just stress and you know, but I think when I left my apartment in Chicago, I left 1,000 magazines in the closet.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
So that was before the internet, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I certainly know that coping behavior. And know it well. I also have done, I would say I have tendencies toward workaholism. That's a way to escape. I can bury myself in books. Reading is really, really good unless that's the only way you face life, right?
Right.
Anyway, that's kind of where I was going with the question.
I was just wondering how sobriety affected your comedy, impacted your comedy, and also what it felt like to be on stage sober versus when you were drinking and using. Or did you go on stage?
It's been so long now. I'm 31 years.
Yeah.
To remember. I had gone through intermittent sobrieties. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I was a binge drinker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd realize, you know, I'd overdo it, and mm-hmm. I'd take 6, 7 days off.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd work sobered. Sober.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that was the issue for me. What changed was books.
Mm-hmm.
I never read, and I was in New York, I think, doing a show at Catch a Rising Star, and I heard a guy refer to somebody as a capitalist swine, and I was driving home and I realized I didn't know what the word capitalist meant.
Mm-hmm.
And like an epiphany, it hits me, because you're a moron. You know, you're not the brightest bulb on the tree. And you make your living with words, and you don't even know it. So I looked up the word, and I thought, well, you know, what's wrong with that? I mean, I didn't understand what the hoopla was about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then I went out and I bought a book on vocabulary.
Wow.
So to answer your question, what changed during sobriety was, I, for whatever reason, I decided to educate myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like I used to tell people, you know, when you quit drinking, you can, you know, you can only bowl so many frames. You got to find something else to do, you know. And again, this is before video games, before, I mean, who knows where I would have crawled in, what I would have crawled into.
Right.
You know,
right.
Especially with the high-speed internet and the porn and all of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I just got into books. And
you're
right, I didn't even think about that. But I became a voracious reader.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was on, you know, John Bradshaw, Melody Beatty stuff was mm-hmm. out, codependency and mm-hmm. New Age Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point I wanted to raise the kids Buddhist. Tammy, I go in, I'm not making this up. It hits me that, you know, I'm a rage freak. The males in our family are all rage freaks. Everybody in our family, cousins, mm-hmm. everybody's got drinking problems, everything.
Yeah.
So I realized if I put my boys in a Buddhist monastery, you know, because when's the last time you read on the paper about a Buddhist monk and a road rage incident? You know? I mean, I had a plan. So I go home. So I go home and I tell Tam, I said, I decided today we're going to put our boys in a Buddhist monastery. And she says, over my dead body. And I go, oh, okay. That's how long it took her to talk me out of it. It's like 8 seconds. That's how convicted I was. But I said, you know, I just was thinking, you know, she goes, stop thinking about it. You know, no, they're not going to a Buddhist monastery. You know? So, all right. So I said to my boys one day, you're lucky you have a mother like your mother, because uh-huh. you would have had shaved heads and, you know, and wearing robes.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned.
Well, did you find that when you got into all these new principles, these new ways of thinking, being, and all of that, that new things had to be funny, and that old things, there were some things, like you mentioned earlier about the way you spoke about women and things like that in your routine. Were there other things that you felt like you had to shift that you didn't want to communicate to people?
I think
anymore,
it was just a natural change. I really mm-hmm. do, based yeah. on the inside out. I've always worked inside out. I've realized that, mm-hmm. you know. When I was drinking and using drugs, I talked a lot about drinking and using drugs. Mm-hmm. I got married. I talked a lot about being married. Mm-hmm. And as I began to change, it was one night. It was some guy saved my life. I was sitting at a bar. I was probably 2 months sober, 2 or 3 months. Anyway, you know, I talked about that on stage, you know, which club owners loved. You know? They're trying to sell booze, and they got a comic for 30 minutes talking about, hey, I got a problem. I got tired of waking up in dumpsters. I got tired of waking up in puddles of my own urine. I got, you know, woo! Have another drink. You know? So anyway, I finished the show, and I'm sitting at the bar. I order a beer. I'm sitting with it, staring at it. And I'm literally looking at it like it's going to – I know it's going to kill me. I know it is. Mm-hmm. And out of nowhere, some guy comes over. He goes, hey, all that stuff you talked about on stage, you know, alcoholic, all that stuff, yeah. that true? And I go, oh, yeah, that's true. He goes, then what are you doing with that?
Yeah.
I go, that's suicide. He goes, come on, man, I'll take you to a meeting. He took me to a meeting.
Did wow. he really?
Yeah. Wow.
And again, as I got to go through the program, you hear the cliches, and one of them was there are no coincidences.
Yeah.
And you start adding up a number of these things. I remember the first time I was using. I went off. My sobriety date was July 5th, and September 28th, I go down to Memphis. I'm not living there, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm working a club there, and my old Coke dealer shows up with free Coke.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So I wind up, you know, going off the wagon and in front of Graceland at 2 a.m. screaming for the king.
Yeah.
You know? Guy comes out, he goes, you have to leave. We know you love Elvis. I said, no, I was just wondering if you left any Valium under the bushes. He goes, that's it, get out of here. We're going to call the cops. I go, I got one night drinking, I'm already getting arrested.
Yeah.
So I go back to my hotel room. And I got Coke left, you know, so I figured I might as well stay. I can't sleep anyway. So I start chopping up the Coke, and a phone number from an AA guy in Boston was stuck to my driver's license, falls into the Coke, you know, and I'm looking at the phone number. I'm looking at the Coke. I know wow. I'm killing myself. Yeah. I know I am.
Yeah.
So 3 a.m, I call him up,
yeah.
get him out of bed. And he says, you have any Coke left? I said, yeah, I got about 0.5 gram left. He said, then flush it. So I go in and I flush it, come back out. And he says, did you flush it? I said, I did. He goes, wow, you're the first. No, you didn't. I go, yeah, I did. He goes, wow. All right, well, you don't sound suicidal. You sound like you're okay. Here's the rules. Try to call me before you use.
Yeah.
And he became my first sponsor.
Wow.
And but again, you begin to believe there are no coincidences. You know? Mm-hmm. And yeah. That phone number falling out, that guy stopping me. Mm-hmm. You know, and then a willingness to do whatever I was told to do. That was, I think, the best thing I did, and I continue to do that today. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to Nate before we went on the air. I said, I really think I've got it now, that I'm not going to be finished. You know? Mm-hmm. This work is going to continue.
Yeah.
I still struggle with the porn. I still struggle with the sex side of things. Mm-hmm. My wiring is, it's getting better. Mm-hmm. I can go months now, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but there's always that moment, you know, that,
yeah,
you know, that mm-hmm. thing I give, you know, you give in and it doesn't last long. You know, I've had mm-hmm. enough recovery, Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like it. It's not comfortable. It's like putting on a shoe that doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to jam your foot in it. You try to jam it in. You get blister and you go, yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and pain is, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, really the only motivator the divine gave us to change.
Yeah.
And that recovery life is so good. It becomes the new normal, and then you get an urge to blow it up, right? Mm-hmm. And not until you've blown it up do you realize how good it was before you lit that fuse. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, right?
And the cycle, the guilt, the shame, I think I'm past the shame. I finally understood that shame says there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. You know, guilt says I did something wrong. Mm-hmm. And it puts it on the behavior.
Yeah.
If you have a guiltless life, God bless you. But I don't. I do things, whether it be a snotty remark to somebody, you know, and again, you write it. I remember learning the ninth step. You know, I'd yell at bank tellers. You know, there's a bank teller in Jersey. I remember screaming because they had the nerve to bounce my checks.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And I go to a meeting and they said, you have to go back. I go, what do you mean I got to go back? You got to make that right. You know, we all make mistakes, but you got to make it right. Mm-hmm. And I walk in and it was funny because I remember, I can still see her in my mind's eyes, just laughing and chatting with a coworker. And then she sees me and she stops, the smile goes away. She bows up and I walk across the room and I said, I need to apologize for my behavior. And she says, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. You know?
Yeah.
And well, you own that enough. And I did. It took four or five really, you know, airports, whatever, to going and apologizing to individuals.
Yeah.
To where you start to react and you go, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you catch it. Doesn't mean you don't have the thought. Mm-hmm. You just catch it. And, you know, that happened in my kid's life. Fourth grade, he cusses and calls his teacher an F and B and, you know, really nasty stuff. Fourth grade.
Yeah.
So we get called in, you know, and I said to the teacher, I have no idea. I said, I'd love to look you in the eye and tell you I have no idea where he heard that kind of language. But truth is, I've had him in a lot of clubs and we use that language at home. We're trying to make changes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wanted him to own it.
Yeah.
So, you know, she says, well, I said, suspend him, you know, and he says, well, I didn't mean it. I said, so what you're saying is that you have no control of the words that come out of your mouth. Whatever pops into your head, you have to. Mm-hmm. So if that was a 6'5", 250-pound linebacker, you would have said the same thing. It was probably not. I go, there you go. Mm-hmm. So you can't control your tongue. Mm-hmm. And that's the most vicious thing, I think, between certainly in my marriage, was the tongue.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of physical violence, but there was a lot of hurt delivered by that.
Now, Jeff, you work clean now.
I do.
Yeah. I'm wondering, what's kind of your sense of mission? What's the passion that drives you to keep getting on the road? I know that, I mean, here we are in January, and you're playing Green Bay tomorrow, right?
I am.
Yeah.
Because God loves me.
No, why? And what is it that you want to bring more? Is it the gift of laughter? Is it more than that? Is there something that you try to communicate when you stand up behind the mic these days?
Well, bottom line is I have no other skill set. So I really don't. I mean, if I got to make a living, I got to, you know, that's kind of, but if I had a mission statement, it's interesting because, you know, I became a believer 22 years ago and the mission was outreach. I thought I want to share the gospel with and that's kind of, you know, you realize that I did, that some people just want to laugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the creator, you want to believe it's evolution, that's fine, you know, but the creator gave us all these healing benefits of laughter. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to talk about too, is that I chase endorphins now.
Oh, yeah.
because I've realized that endorphins, you know, I exercise a lot now, and a lot more than I used to.
It shows, man. You look really fit.
I am in the best shape I've probably been in since I was 18 years old.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And it wasn't anything I set out to do. It was funny because Tammy came to me and said she wanted to exercise a number of years ago. I said, great. I said, I have some tapes downstairs in the basement. I said, we'll put them in. And they're low impact or they're nothing. So anyway, she made it 2 days.
Yeah.
I just kept going. And I just really started feeling good. I'd feel good when I came upstairs. And then I started reading about the benefits of high-intensity interval training. And it's, you know, 30 minutes, 25, 30 minutes. You spike, you rest, spike, rest, spike, rest, you know. And the endorphins that get released. You know, I was a runner at some point in my life, and then I had to stop because I had my hip replaced. But, and then laughter. I've been listening to more comedy now than I probably listened to in the last 20 years. I never used to listen to comedy because if I was working on something and I heard somebody do something, I would go, well, like, now I can't do it.
Yeah, you know.
So I wanted to stay away from that. I felt if I created something, then I didn't, you know, it wasn't planted by somebody else. And but now I just got George Carlin's commemorative set.
Wow.
I mean, it's literally everything he ever did, all the way to some clubs in L.A. that I used to work, the Comedy Magic. He did some sets there. And he's one of my, he's always been one of my favorites, one of the greatest wordsmiths there are.
Yeah.
You know, so that is bringing positive things in. I don't spend a lot of time around cynics anymore. I just don't, I choose not to. I don't spend any time on Twitter.
Oh, that's good, man.
Or Facebook. You know, I hired somebody to do my social media, which is great because now I can sit in my basement, make goofy videos, and send them out. And I don't really get into, you know, views and likes and, and things like that because of the shallow nature of it. I mean, I'm at least far enough along in my journey to know that you're a good friend, Nate.
Yeah.
You are. And you know, good friends are people who know you.
Yeah.
You know, again, I just wrote a blog called Seen Versus Known. We live in a culture now that's ubiquitously wants to be seen, but nobody wants to get known. You know?
Wow.
And it takes conversations across the table, looking at people in the eye.
Yeah.
And genuinely caring. And again, it's all part of recovery.
Yeah.
Because it gets out of you. I had a great tip from a sponsor once, man, when I first went to SA. He said, put these trash bags in your car. I said, for what? He said, whenever you feel like using, go pick up trash at a mini mart.
Yeah.
And here's the hard part. Don't let anybody see you doing it.
Yeah.
Because that'll make you feel good and your pride will kick in. I thought that's the stupidest thing, you know. I'm, at that time, I'm 25 years sober. I don't, you know, pick up trash. Well, one day I'm gripping the steering wheel. I know I should go home. I don't want to go home.
Yeah.
I want to do what I want to do, and because I think I deserve it. That was a big lie I told myself.
Yeah.
And anyway, I see the trash bag, so I stop at some Circle K, and I start picking up trash.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
It really does. It was making me laugh. I was saying, what a stupid thing. Pick up trash, but don't let anybody see you. You know? I was waiting for some manager to come out and go, what the hell are you doing in my parking lot? We like that trash. We put it there. that's a great tool in the arsenal.
It really is.
Anything that gets you out of yourself that's not rewiring the brain negatively, and that's you know, and doing for others is you know, that's why, you know, you fold chairs after meetings and you make coffee, and to learn service of others. And you know, I try to do what I can comedy wise to benefit. You know, I can't do everything that's requested of me.
Yeah.
But I try to.
You do a lot of benefits?
A handful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I do as many as I can. I mean,
yeah.
It's a lot easier if they're around Nashville.
Sure.
Because I live here.
Speaking of which, I don't know that it's a benefit, but I did see that you're playing the Franklin Theater.
I am, April 6th.
I saw you on the marquee, man.
Yeah, wow. I am.
I will be there.
That's fun.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
I'm. The last time I was there, we sold it out, and I think the people had a good time.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. And for those who want to look at your touring schedule, read your blog, all that kind of stuff, where do they find you online?
JeffAllenComedy.com.
Okay.
And so JeffAllenComedy.com and JAllenComedy on Instagram and at JeffAllenComedy on Twitter. I don't tweet much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking time to come and sit with us and have this conversation with us and with our listeners.
Absolutely.
I'm honored to be asked.
I know this is going to be a popular episode. And, well, David?
Yes, sir.
Listeners, if you'll hang with us, we'll be back in just a minute for some closing thoughts here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. Nate, that was probably the most entertaining conversation about some of the most serious things in our recovery lives.
Yeah.
You know, just getting to talk to Jeff and hear him talk about with real honesty about just where our crazy minds take us when we're steeped in substances and behaviors that that we just can't find our way out of on our own.
One of the reasons that I love to be around Jeff is that it helps me feel less alone a little bit.
Yeah.
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 It's not just me.
Right. Right. And I appreciated his candor and honesty when he said, I still struggle.
Yeah.
You know, I still have these little dips. They're fewer and further between, but it's that progress and not perfection that we always want people to remember.
That's it. Absolutely. So. And I got to tell you, when he gets going on his act, Allie and I were fortunate enough to be invited to a taping a few years ago for a XM Sirius Radio, I think. Mm-hmm. He did a comedy special.
Right,
and
right.
We got to be in the studio audience.
Yeah.
I don't think I've laughed that hard in my life.
Oh, man.
Oh.
That's great. That is...
He can just get it going. So,
well, and him being at the Franklin Theater is going to be
amazing.
Yeah, that's a great venue, and I know people will love the opportunity to go hear him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know whether I'll be in the room next week, but we got a great guest next week. Kind of depends on how things are going at home with Allie.
Yeah.
I hope to be.
How your knee replacement is going?
How my knee replacement's going? Yeah.
Yeah, but we do. We have next week, I believe, we have Dr. Stephen Lloyd
coming up. Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. And we got other great guests on down the road, so the adventure continues. I'm having such a good time, David.
Yeah. Oh, me too. This is a bright spot. So.
Well, then, until next time, I'm Nate.
I'm David.
And we are your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelly, music by Rex Schnelly, theme music by Matt Ulrich, hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett, wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.